All right, we're ready for Mark chapter 4 in our survey. And for those who are visiting with us, we're making our way through the entire New and Old Testament in a survey, and so we're going at a pretty good pace. So we're going to cover all of chapter 4 of the Gospel of Mark. So today we're slated for chapter 4. This is the outline that we're following. We borrow that from Brother L.A. Stopher. I think he captures the thought. And we are in the second section, and that deals with the Galilean ministry. I remind you that the Gospel of Mark is a fast-paced book. It was written in fast pace, meaning that he just quickly gets to the next point, to the next point, and to the next point. We've seen that multiple times already, and we're already in chapter 4. So here we are at chapter 4. We are at the point where Matthew didn't get to this point to chapter 13. So that gives you a little bit of idea of the fast pace with which Mark writes. Now let's expand the Galilean ministry. We've seen this already. We've looked at his popularity. Mark quickly described how popular he became. People are following him out of interest of his miracles and the things that he can do, fascinated perhaps with some of his teaching. We'll say more about that later. Not all of them were buying into what he had to say. So then there is this section of conflict that we've dealt with already in chapters 2 and in chapter 3, and now we're ready to deal with the parables. A short section on parables here, and that's in chapter 4. But all of chapter 4 doesn't deal with parables. We have the identity section, as Stopher outlines that, as we begin into who he is and what he can do, and that refers to another miracle that's performed. We'll see that slide again in just a moment. So let's review the first three chapters. Chapter 1 was, the beginning of the Galilean ministry. That didn't start to chapter 4 in Matthew, by the way. Chapter 2. Here's where the conflict begins. So Mark quickly gets to that. I mean, he jumps right in to the fray of the conflict. Then in chapter 3, more conflict. This time it has to do with this controversy over the Sabbath healing. More in chapter 3 than just that, but that's the predominant thought of chapter 3. All right, what's chapter 4 about? Question 1 for today. What's the main point of chapter 4? Parables of Jesus. And so we have in chapter 4, I just simply call it parables. Parallel account would be Matthew 13. All of chapter 13 deals with parables. So we have the same thing here in Mark 4. Now there are over 30 parables that are told about in the Gospels. That is, as we combine all of the Gospels, all four, there's 30 plus parables that are mentioned and described. Mark only deals with 5. There are 4 found in this text, which are what? Question number 3. Parable of the sower, parable of light under the basket or bushel, parable that deals with the growing seed, and then there is the mustard seed. There are 4 parables dealt with here. There's a 5th one that's mentioned in Mark 12. So if you're trying to keep up with where are the others, there's one more mentioned in Mark 12. That's all that Mark talks about. Matthew deals with more. That harmonizes with this fast-paced tone with which Mark is writing. So he deals with those 4 parables. Now let's stop and talk about question number 2. What is a parable? All right, a story that's easily understood by the audience carries with it a message that the writer is intending. The word literally means to lay beside. And that gives us the idea that here is the truth that the Lord is trying to teach, and he lays beside that something that everyone can well understand so that they get the message of the gospel he's trying to teach. And so which is being laid beside the other? Well, they're laying beside each other. That's the idea. or you take this story and you lay beside it the truth you're trying to teach. So it literally means to lay beside. For a little tidbit, if you care to know this, let's go over to verse 30 of our text. That Jesus said, to what shall we liken? That's an interesting word. That's not the word parable. The kingdom of God, or with what parable, the New King James says, shall we picture it? The King James doesn't use the word parable. It is the word translated parable, as in here and in other texts. But the King James uses the word comparison. To what shall we compare it? See? Lay beside. That's what a parable is. All right. I want us to go back now and start, before we get into the parables itself, what's Jesus trying to do in these parables in chapter 4? Or perhaps maybe another way of wording that, what is Mark trying to paint by telling these parables? Now, I know he's doing it by inspiration, but what is the message Mark is trying to paint by grouping these particular parables? If there were 30, why these four and not a different four? Or adding one more or taking one away. Why these four? Well, it seems that Mark is trying to paint a picture of the hardening of the heart in the conflict that we just dealt with. So in chapters 2 and 3, you see the hardened hearts where Jesus is working miracles and they reject the miracles. He teaches and they reject that. So here's the conflict with the Pharisees. No matter what he does, no matter what he says, there's going to be a conflict. There's the hardening of the hearts. So Jesus seems to be painting a picture of what goes on in the spread of the gospel and the hardening of the hearts. Does that make sense? That seems to be the flavor that he's trying to describe here in this context. All right, now let's before we get into the parable of the sower, let's look at verse 1. That he began to teach by the sea. This was not uncommon for him, and a great multitude gathered, so much so that they got him into a boat and he sat down by the sea. So just a little way out from the sea, he's sitting in a boat and the whole multitude was on the land facing the sea. Matthew said they stood. Now you think about that. Now they stood listening to him, not sat down resting, but they stood watching him and listening to him as he's in a boat seated and he's teaching them and he spoke to them by parables. Now, notice at verse 2 that he taught them many things by parables. And here's what he said. So beginning at verse 3, he deals with the parable of the sower. Now, let me flag some things here for you for that may help us understand more about the parable of the sower. Now, we're going to come back and see this outline. Let's talk about the parables that are dealt with here. There are four in this context. There's the parable of the sower that's dealt with in verses 1 to 8. 13 to 20 is the interpretation. Then there's the light under the basket, the growing seed, and then there is the mustard seed. And we'll talk about each one of those, but let's focus on the sower. We call this the parable of the sower, and I'm going to call it that because that's what we all call it, but it's actually the parable of the soils. The focus is not on the sower. The focus is on the various soils. But if I talked about the parable of the soils, we may get a little confused. We all know the parable of the sower. Anyway, be that as it may, notice he brackets this parable with two statements, which means this has something to do with the parable. Look at verse 3. He says, listen. Sower went forth to sow. Now, when he gets through with the parable, not the interpretation, but just telling the parable, verse 9, what does he say? He that has ears to hear, let him hear. Listen, hear. Now drop down to verse 23. This is not in the parable of the sower, but it's another parable. If anyone has ears to hear, let him hear. It's bracketed by emphasis on listening. Not merely listening to know what's being said, but listening with the idea of taking heed to what is said. Make sense? So in that context of listen, what's the problem with the contrast or the conflict with the Pharisees? They were not listening. Let me footnote for you a passage that if you delve into it a little clearer, it's one of the most fascinating passages you'll study on listening. Romans 10:17. Faith comes by hearing, hearing by the word, and you say, oh yeah, I'm familiar with that. What that is emphasizing is this is how we get faith. That's part of what's being emphasized. Look at it in its context. What he's saying in Romans 10:17, the reason they didn't have faith is because they didn't listen. Does that make sense? You say, well, they didn't get a chance to hear. Oh, yeah, they heard, verse 18, 19, Romans 10. They didn't listen to what they heard. Make sense? Going on right here in this context. All right, so let's talk about this parable of the sower. He said, a sower went forth to sow. It's the idea of broadcasting seed. And so you say, well, I'm familiar with gardening. And you plow the ground up and you till it up and you get it all worked up. And then you self-rows and you plant your seed. And so I know what it means to sow. That's not the kind of sowing that's going on. This is broadcasting seed. And as you would broadcast in sowing the seed, seed is going to fall on various kinds of soil. So he mentions four here. We don't have time to go greatly in depth, but we're going to do as best we can. Some fell on the wayside, which would be the path. Some fell on the stony ground, some fell on the thorny ground, and some fell on the good ground. So what I want to do as quickly as I can, and so try to keep up, we're going to look at parallel accounts. What's in the red bracket is our text, and the others are the parallel accounts. And so we're going to try to see where the other accounts may enlighten us. So here's the first. He says at verse 4, it happened that as he sowed, that some of the seed fell by the wayside, and the birds, and the reason I put it in a different color of the air, that's added here in contrast to the other accounts. Mark adds that. The birds of the air came and devoured it. Now, Matthew says essentially the same thing, but Luke's account adds, and it was trampled down. That means that was the path. So as the seed is being scattered, some of it fell over here on the path. And it was trampled down, and the birds of the air come and took it away before it took root. That's all he tells us at this point. The interpretation comes later. All right, let's go to the second. There's the stony ground. Let's take our text, verses 5 and 6. Some fell on the stony ground where it did not have much earth, and immediately it sprang up because it had no depth of earth. And when the sun was up, it was scorched, and because it had no root, it withered away. Now, Matthew says essentially the same thing. Mark adds, because it lacked moisture. The ground is, the dirt's very shallow. Doesn't interpret that for us. He just said some fell on the stony ground. All right, let's go further. Verse 7. The text says, and some fell among the thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked it, and it yielded no crop. The highlighted section is something Mark mentioned that the others don't mention. It yielded no crop. Matthew says essentially that it choked it, and so does the same thing as said in Luke's account. That's why it yielded no crop. It's choked out by the thorns. All right, no interpretation yet. So let's go to verse 8. Some seed fell on the good ground, and it yielded a crop, and it sprang up, and it increased and produced. Matthew mentions that. Mark mentions that. Matthew nor Luke, neither one mentioned that. And it yielded some 30-fold, 60-fold, and 100-fold. And what's interesting to me, and I don't know any significance of this, just fascinating to me, that Matthew mentions that in reverse order, 100-fold, 60, and 30. What do we do with that? I don't know. It's just interesting it's mentioned in reverse order. All right. Now then, let's look at the interpretation. Now that's the parable in verses 4 through 8. And so everybody that knew anything about sowing, you're scattering seed. Some seed's going to fall on some soil. So there are four different kinds of soil that fell on. What does it mean? We hadn't got to that yet. So we're going to skip a section. We'll come back. We're going to get it, hopefully. So let's jump on over now to verse 14. And verse 14 tells us that the sower sows the word. So the seed he's sowing is the word. Luke's account is a little more specific. The seed is the word of God. Now Matthew says, anyone who hears the word of the kingdom. Those are the parallel accounts. So this is, the interpretation is, this is the sowing of the word. All right? So what's the point? The spread of the gospel. We're going to learn something in every one of these parables about the spread of the gospel and the impact of the gospel. And Mark quickly gets to this. I mean, he's fast-paced. He gets it and hits it and moves on. Got it? All right. So let's look at the interpretation of this, starting at verse 15 now. So let's look at verse 15. We're going to make some application as we go along. Look at verse 15. And these are the ones that fell on the wayside where the word was sown. When they hear, Satan comes immediately and takes away the word that was sown in their hearts. Matthew adds, they did not understand it. Luke adds, lest they should believe and be saved. I don't know if that helps you, but that helps me to harmonize all the accounts. And so they didn't grasp it. They didn't understand it. This is on the wayside. They heard the word. It doesn't really take root, and Satan comes and takes it away. So what's that talking about? You tell me. All right. Go ahead. All right. This is the unresponsive hearer. And it's the soul that's on the pathway, the path that's already been indicated by Luke's account particularly, that's packed down and it's hardened. It represents the mind that is closed, the heart of the mind that's closed, the dishonesty. Do you remember chapter 2, chapter 3? I take it that Jesus is targeting right at that heart of the Pharisees. They were dishonest. They ignore what they know to be true. They are indifferent. They prejudice. They reject before they even consider. And so the result is the word doesn't germinate in that kind of heart, and there is no life. Now, here's something very practical when you say, well, I'm familiar, and I've heard this parable of the sower. But I want to tell you, we're sometimes puzzled. I don't care how old you are in the kingdom, spiritually mature. We sometimes are still puzzled. We preach the same gospel, and one person gets mad and leaves. Another person responds and becomes stronger, and another person just acts indifferent. We say, they heard the same message. What are we doing wrong? It may not be we're doing anything wrong. We're scattering the seed. The difference is in the heart and in the soil. There's your difference. And I'm learning that right here. So Jesus said, I taught the seed to some of you, and you were like the wayside, the hardened, packed down dirt, and it didn't take root, and Satan took it away before it could take root because of the hardness of the soil. All right, let's go on. Then he says at verse 16, here's the stony ground. What does he say about the stony ground? These likewise are the ones on the stony ground who, when they hear the word, immediately receive it with gladness. Sounds good. And they have no root in themselves, so they endure only for a time afterward when tribulation or persecution arises for the word's sake. You might underline for the word's sake. Immediately they stumble. Matthew says essentially the same thing. Luke adds, in the time of temptation, they fall away. All right, let's talk about the stony ground. What kind of person does this represent? All right, yeah. Have you ever seen somebody hear the gospel, and I mean they're excited, it takes off, the gospel seems to take root, and you think it's going somewhere, and then it quickly fizzles when pressure comes on. We've all seen it. This is the ungrounded listener. This is the soil where there's rock beneath a thin layer of soil, and there's some soil, but it's not enough for it to take root. The problem is not that it quickly takes root. It's that the ground is too shallow. So the problem when it says it quickly takes root, takes off, that's not the problem. That it was too quick. The problem is, it's too shallow. There's no depth. There's no root. Their faith is shallow. They're moved by emotion. They fail to calculate what's involved. Have you ever seen someone just basically, whether they can or not, it seems like they just jump right into the kingdom and then they realize this is going to cost me more than I thought, and they just jump right back out. They hadn't counted on it. They're convinced, but they're not convicted. So their life is only momentary. Problems come and they're gone. We've seen it. All right? Now there's another soil. This is the thorny ground. Now verse 18 and 19 in our bracket. These are the ones that are sown among the thorns when they hear the word, the cares of the world, deceitfulness, riches, And Mark is the only one who adds this, the desire for other things. Entering in, choke the word, it becomes unfruitful. Luke adds something that's not mentioned in the others, and that's the pleasures of life. The desire for the things of this life. Who's that represent? Yeah. They're unproductive because the soil is not lacking in fertility or depth. It's something that chokes and crowds it out. The ground itself may be good, but there's some thorns there that's choking the cares of the world. Things not wrong within themselves. Their focus and their priorities gone, misplaced. Make sense? Yeah, I think it could be. Very much so. And notice I put here, and I'm not going to go through every point, they're drawn away by the things that are here and now versus spiritual. And a thorn could be anything that crowds out the spiritual. You say, well, could I be growing among thorns? Anything that crowds out the spiritual and chokes the spiritual life in you could be the thorn. So it germinates, it takes life, it lasts for a while, but there is no fruit. All right? Let's go one more time. There is some that fell among the good ground. These are the ones who hear, and Mark is the only one that adds, would accept it, and it bears fruit 30-fold, 60, and 100. Now, Matthew and Mark words it different, and there's perhaps a reason for that. Matthew mentions they understand it. Mark says they accept it, and Luke says they keep it. Isn't that interesting? It's fascinating to me. When you harmonize the account, you need to understand it, you need to accept it, and you need to keep it. Need to be dedicated. All right, that's the productive listener. The soul is good. It has depth. There's no thorns. It's the good and honest heart, the person that desires the truth. And here's how they handle the word. They understand it, they accept it, and they obey it. And so therefore they have fruit in infinite abundance, 30-fold, 60-fold, and 100-fold. That's a pretty good fold, I want to tell you. Questions or comments on the parable of the soils or sower? Yes, sir.
The first one seems to be the most dangerous for us because it doesn't say that it kills off that third type of plant. It's just choked out and it's just not productive. We could be sitting here every Sunday, every Wednesday, show up and like, yeah, we care, we're here, but the cares of the world keep us from talking to someone else, evangelizing anyway, doing anything. And we can go through our entire life like, I've been here my whole life as a Christian and never be productive. That's what this is talking about.
Yeah.
Non-productive Christians that have accepted it, believe it, just don't do anything.
Good point. Good point. Making sense? Put this back in context now with what Mark is trying to paint for us of the conflict in chapters 2 and 3, and immediately following, he groups some parables about the effect of the gospel. Making sense? So Jesus has been proclaiming the message to some that are like the wayside soil, others like the stony ground, like the thorns, and yet he's looking for the good soil. All right. Now, let's move on to talk about the second of those, and that's the light under the basket. Now, this one and the next one seem to be focused on similar concepts. We'll talk about that. But beginning at verse 21, that is a lamp bought to be put under a basket. The King James says a bushel. That's a container. Bedag suggests that has probably the same as a peck or a half a bushel in size. I don't know that that's a big deal, but nonetheless, here's a small basket or a container. And he said, do you get a lamp, and is the goal to put it under something that would hide the light? No, the answer is. His second question is, or do you put it under a bed, hide it away where it can't be seen? No, the answer is no. Is it not to be set on a lampstand? In other words, so that it may shine and show light. Now let's stop and talk about what that may mean, and then we'll get through the rest down through verse 25. What's his point? You tell me. All right, not to hide the light of the word. Good point. I think his point is that the message of the gospel, as he just talked about the spreading of the gospel in the parable of the soils, that the message of the kingdom is not to be secret, it's not to be hidden, but it's to be taught and it's to be spread. And so you don't have a light and put it under a bushel, you don't put it under a bed. Now, could this have reference to our influence? Sure. But it's not in that context, in Mark's account at least. Has to do with the use of the gospel and the spread of the gospel, and which has to do with our influence, I recognize. But it's to be taught and it's to be spread, and it's to be scattered. Now notice at verse 22, there's nothing hidden which should not be revealed and nothing that's kept secret that should not come to light. And then he adds this point, everyone who has ears to hear, let him hear. In other words, the gospel is going to be revealed, the gospel is revealed, the gospel is to shine and illuminate. Now, what's interesting is how Mark's account or Luke's account shed some light on Mark's account in my mind. Mark 4:24, take heed, Jesus said to them, take heed what you hear, with what measure you use, etc. We'll come back to that. Take heed what you hear. Luke's account words that differently. Take heed how you hear. And many of us have made the point, and I think it's an accurate point, that Jesus says you need to take heed what you hear, make sure you're hearing the truth, and then take heed how you listen to that. I really think the accounts are parallel and that what Mark is talking about is the same thing Luke is talking about. Take heed what you hear in the sense of how you hear. That fits the context. Take heed how you listen. C.E.W. Doris made the point that probably some in the audience of Jesus were inclined, as we are, to hear only what corresponds with our desires. You think about that. Often we hear what we want to hear. I hear a message that agrees with my desires. I don't listen to the message that does not agree with my desire. So you take heed how you hear. You take heed what you hear in the sense of how you hear. What you listen to what you don't like as well as what you do like. Does that make sense? Yeah, absolutely. Now, he goes further to say, that with what measure you use, it will be measured back to you, and more will be given. And whatever one has, to him shall more be given. And whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him. I think it's the same principle. You either use it or you lose it. So here's the point I think he's driving at. Those who hear will learn and gain and receive even more. And those that will not listen will lose even what they've heard and learned. Have we not seen that? You teach someone the gospel and they may, it may take some root and they obey the gospel and then they suddenly go away and they've forgotten the basics that they've learned. You say, how could they forget? Hebrews 5. Look at Hebrews 5. Beginning in verse 12. They forgot even what they already knew. You need to be taught again the first principles. You use it or you lose it. You take it and you grow and you gain and you're going to learn even more. And you're going to gain even more. And you're going to gain even more. Blessings, but more of the benefits of the revelation. Make sense? So I think he's focusing on the effect of the gospel in this parable. That a light, that this light is not to be hidden, it's to shine forth and let all see. And as it shines forth, if you listen and you pay attention, you're going to learn even more. Is that making sense? Now notice at the end of verse 25, even what he has will be taken away from him. Luke adds an interesting tidbit to that. What he thinks he has. That's interesting to me. What do you think that means? Maybe what he thought he had, he really didn't have. What knowledge he thought he had, he really didn't have. What understanding he had, he really didn't have. I think I got it. I think this is all I need. And he may lose even what he thought he had. we may not have all that we think we have. Make sense? Flag Luke and take a look at that and see what you can do with that. All right, let's look at the next parable, the growing seed, 26 to 29. You may want to flag the fact that Mark is the only writer to mention this. You won't find the parallel account in the synoptics or in John either, for what that may be worth to you. And a simple overview of this before we look at it has to do with the rapid growth of the gospel, the developmental stages. I think there's more to it than that. So let's see. It seems that the focus in this parable has to do with that which is beyond observation and beyond the power of the sower. How so? Well, let's see. The kingdom of God is like a man who scattered seed on the ground. Here's that same kind of scattering and sowing of the seed. In context, it must be spreading of the gospel. And so he sleeps and he rises by day and the seed sprouts up and it grows. He himself does not know how. Doesn't mean he doesn't understand how seed works. Doesn't mean he doesn't know the seed dies and then germinates. He may understand that. That's not what he's saying. But he himself doesn't know how, for the earth yields the crop itself, first the blade, then the head, and then the full grain of head, and when it ripens, immediately plucks the, and the sickle and harvest comes. So what's it talking about? I don't know 100%, but I think what he's focusing on is there's the sowing and the reaping, and what happens between that is beyond the observation and beyond the power of the sower. Does that make sense? If you've ever taught anybody the gospel, if you've ever preached or done anything and you teach somebody and then later they obey the gospel and it may have taken time, what happened in between? You may not observe. Did you see the exact moment that the seed germinated and they grasped and they understood and when conviction set in and when they decided to make a change? You don't see all of that, nor do you understand exactly how that's working. And we can't make it. It's beyond our power. Good point. It's beyond our power. And so I want this to work. I can't make it work. And it doesn't seem like the seed is germinating. It may come later. I can't force it and say, I want it to go now. You sow the seed, there'll be the reaping later. And what happens in between is beyond your observation and beyond your power. Even with the Lord. The Lord sowed it. Now, I'm saying the Lord knew what was going on. But he sows it, and then it's going to depend on the heart and the soul of the person. Now, verse 28, there's a lot of questions about what is the blade and what is the head. I'm not sure. Some think that, and I think this is kind of a secondary view, and also I'll come back to the first view in a minute. But the secondary view is that had reference to the Old Testament prophets, the gospel being sown first, maybe with Moses or with Abraham and then Moses and then the prophets and then John the Baptist and then finally with the Christ. And so it's in stages. I don't think that's really what he's talking about. I think it may have reference to more. The gospel is sown, and it starts first with knowledge, and then maybe it comes to conviction, and then repentance, and then obedience, and then dedication and faithfulness. And so you've seen people that they hear the gospel, and it takes a little while, and then they obey the gospel. And then after they obey the gospel, they get stronger. There are various stages before the reaping comes. Make sense? So this focuses on the inward. Now the next one is going to focus on the outward. The parable of the mustard seed. We must move on because we're going to get through with the chapter if we can. What's the point of the parable of the mustard seed? For the Galileans, or the people of the region, that region of Palestine, that was the smallest of seeds. There may be smaller seeds, but that was the smallest, scholars suggest, that they may have known. So the point is, the kingdom of heaven is like the mustard seed when it's sown, smaller than all the seeds of the earth. Now what happens? Verse 32. Yeah, it's massive fruits. The focus is on the outward evidence of the growth. Some writers have suggested, you want to see how that worked? Go to the book of Acts. Start reading in Acts 2, then see how the gospel spread from Jerusalem and Judea, Samaria, and the uttermost parts of the world. It grew fast. So what's the point here in these parables? Let me back up to the parables themselves. The different kinds of soil, the hardness of the heart particularly, the influence of the gospel, and the light under the basket, and then the growing seed. We don't see the impact that's taking place, and then the mustard seed, the outward evidence that finally comes and the widespread. It's like planting that seed and you have this great massive. Now, let's quickly talk about the purpose of parables. We have a question on that. Question number four, what's the purpose of the parables? 10 to 12. And you see it a little later in verses 33 to 34. Yeah, and it's not just, good point, it's not just that here's a simple illustration. When Jesus spoke in parables like the mustard seed, if you really want to know the truth of the gospel, you look at that and figure out the application of that. Otherwise, if you hear him and somebody say, well, what was the master talking about? I don't know, he talked about mustard seed. What's with that? And then he talked about some kind of seed sowing and you don't know about it going to be to a black. I don't understand. And so you reject the message if you're not interested in the message as a bunch of nonsense. What else did he talk about? Well, he talked about man going forth to sow and some seed grew and some seed didn't and the different kind. I don't know what he's talking about. If you want to know the truth, you seek out the evidence of the truth and you'll understand each one of those parables. If you don't want to know the truth, it's a bunch of nonsense. Does that make sense? I think that's what Jesus is saying in 10 to 12. Now, I know we're kind of hurried, but I want to move here to verses 35 to 41. Now, that's a short section about the parables. Here's the purpose. Here's four. He's going to get one more later in chapter 12. Now, we're shifting gears right here. And so let's quickly take note of this, that he starts into this identity section. And so we're familiar with this, so we can cover this in a couple of minutes here, of the gist of it at least. Starting at chapter 4 and verse 35, we have this calming of the sea. And so I'm just going to flag a couple of things where that's mentioned here in Mark that's not mentioned in the other accounts. This is showing power over nature. Power over nature. He not only has power over disease, but he has power over nature. Now notice that verse 38 is there in the midst. They go to the other side, which generally means on the eastern side is where they would have gone. He was in the same boat, the text tells us. And the storm arose. Verse 38, two things that are mentioned here that are not mentioned elsewhere. And that is he was asleep on a pillow. I believe it's Matthew mentions he was in the stern, sleeping on a pillow, for the detail of what that may be worth to you. And they cry out to him, he's perishing. And Matthew does not mention, but Mark mentions that when he commanded the sea to be calm, his command was, peace, be still. And we know that, but Mark is the one who mentions that. Now, what was the reaction? Quickly, and we'll be done. Yeah, yeah. The Luke's account seems to reverse a little bit of that, where he questions them about their faith, and or Mark does. They questions them about their faith, and they become fearful because of that when they look at his power. That who is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? Evidence of who he is. So we've started a new section of his evidence as Mark is presenting it. Chapter 5, 2 weeks. Next week is our meeting, 2 weeks from today, Mark 5.